بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على المبعوث رحمة العالمين سيدنا محمد النبي الأمي وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. وبعد، so we are reading from the text تدريب السالك إلى قراءة أقرب المسالك في مذهب الإمام مالك رضي الله عنه وأرضاه. And we have finished all of the chapters associated with Salah, with prayer, and that includes the chapters dealing with tahara or ritual ablution or purification that is done prior to prayer, and of the three main types, namely wudu and ghusl and tayammum. And now we have we also covered the section upon funeral prayer and the prayer of the two Eids. And now we move to the next rukun or next essential of Islam, namely the zakat. And zakat in Arabic comes from the verb zaka yazku, which they said means in numu or increase. So it's seen that the zakat is a way to actually have an increase and not a decrease. People traditionally or conventionally think when you give something away that you're losing something, but actually you are giving something. In the hadith of Aisha radiallahu anha, when she gave away in sadaqah, gave away in charity a lamb, and she told the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, all that is left is the shoulder, I believe. And he said, no, everything is, you have given everything except the shoulder. In other words, we have gained everything, but you left the shoulder behind. So that's, and the zakah is seen as not something where that one could find bankruptcy or to be put in a difficult situation, but rather the opposite. So there's, al-khalaf, that which would be renewed when someone gives a zakah. Another word for zakah that's also used, especially in the Maliki madhab, is sadaqah. Sadaqah sometimes means charity, but it could also mean zakah, like in the Quranic verse, Surah At-Tawbah. إِنَّمَا الصَّدَقَاتُ لِلْفُقَرَاءِ وَالْمَسَاكِينُ وَالْعَامِلِينَ عَلَيْهَا إِلَىٰ آخِرِ الْآيَةِ. So the sadaqat here means is zakah, which is the asnaf or the categories of zakah, which we will be going over in this chapter of zakah. So it's meant, sadaqah means min as-sidq, from sincerity. So the one who gives then, and gives freely and happily, then that's a test of your sincerity. So it's actually giving something away where there's no sort of tangible dunyawi benefit that comes back to you, but the benefit is purely actually for yourself, even though you may not see that. So he says, Kitab al-Zakah, the chapter dealing with zakah, al-zakatu ahadu arkan al-Islam, وقرينه الصلاة قال أبو بكر رضي الله عنه لا أقتلن من فرق بين الصلاة والزكاة. So he said the zakah is one of the pillars of Islam and one of the five pillars as we know. وقرينه الصلاة, and it is paired oftentimes with the صلاة as we find in the Quran. وأقيموا الصلاة وآتوا الزكاة. So it is considered to be an essential, just like the prayer is, to the degree that Abu Bakr as-Siddiq, the companion of the greatest companion of the Prophet ﷺ, said that I will fight those who make a distinction between the prayer and the zakah. In other words, seeing the prayer as an obligation, but considering the zakah not to be an obligation. And for anyone who denies the obligatory nature of something that is known from the religion necessarily, like salah, like zakah, then that's incompatible with a faith in Islam. In other words, it's no longer Islam. If you say, I believe in Islam that has prayer, but it doesn't have zakah, that's not Islam anymore, that's something else. You're free to follow it, but don't call it Islam or the Islam of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So he says, وَهِيَ مِنْ خِطَابِ الْوَضَعِ فَتَجِبُ عَلَى الْمُكَلَّفِ فِي مَالِهِ وَتَجِبُ فِي مَالِ الصَّبِيِّ وَالْمَجْنُونِ وَالْمُخَاطَبُ بِهَا الْوَلِيِّ. So this is, he says, هَيَ مِنْ خِطَابِ الْوَضَعِ, which there's two types of khitab, or two types of ways that Allah can command us to do something or to require us to do something. Something is called khitab al-taklif or khitab al-wada. So khitab al-taklif means you personally, as a person, this is addressed to you as a person. So when it says wa aqimu salah, that's addressed to you as a person. So not that the prayer has to be prayed, but you as an individual have to pray. Versus the zakah, and this is specific to the Maliki madhab, the Hanafi madhab actually sees the zakah as also min khitab al-taklif. So the Hanafi madhab believes that Also, the zakah is to be paid by the person. In other words, the discourse is addressed to the person. When we say khitab al-wada, it means the address is addressed to the wealth itself, regardless of who owns it. So that means تجب على المكلف في ماله وتجب على المال الصبي والمجنون. So someone who is mukallaf, in other words, you meet the required conditions of taklif, and that you are Muslim, and you are of sound mind, and so forth. Actually, in this instance, only that you meet the requirement that you're Muslim, because sound mind, that's something specific to the individual, and here we're talking about the wealth. So he says, "وَتَجِبُ فِي مَالِ الصَّبِيِّ وَالْمَجْنُونِ." So in the wealth of the young child who's not of age yet, but raised by Muslim parents, and of the person who's insane or otherwise indisposed to having access to their wealth for a period of time, whether it's definite or indefinite, there is still a zakat to be paid on their particular wealth. That still has to be done. So that's from khitab al-wada. Just like you could think of it almost like fard kifay, almost like a communal obligation. So in this case, though, if there's someone specific who is in charge of the wealth of the, let's say, the orphan or the young child or the person who's not able to access their wealth due to some mental illness, then that wali, or the person in charge of that wealth, then they are the ones who have to pay the zakah on behalf of the wealth of the person. So if they fail to do that, there's no sin on the child and no sin on the person who's mentally ill, because they're not mukallaf on an individual basis, but the sin then would be upon the person who was tasked to pay the zakat. The Hanafi method would say no. Hanafi method would say even the child and the insane person, they don't have to pay zakat on their wealth until they become sane or until they reach the age of pubescence, then they would pay zakat on their wealth. So Imam Malik likely more looked at it like as a societal obligation rather than a individual obligation. So he sees the zakah as haqq lil faqir, as a right of the person who is deserving of it. So that means it should not stop or should not be prevented due to the nature of the person giving it, but looking purely at the nature of the wealth itself. Wallahu a'lam. So that doesn't mean that the Hanafi school didn't say that the faqir or the indigent person doesn't have a right to it. They do. But they were looking more specifically at this is something that is a responsibility of the person who owns the wealth. And so to meet that responsibility, they have to have certain conditions. And amongst them would be the same conditions as for the one who's praying. Whereas the Malikiyya, radiallahu anhum, said, لَهَوَ مِنْ خِطَابِ الْوَضَعِ. It's from something of the wada, which means once the wealth is there and it reaches a certain amount, no matter, regardless of who owns it, pays zakat on it. Allahu a'lam. طيب. وَوَجُوبُهَا فِي النَّقْدَيْنِ والنعم وعشرين نوعا من الحبوب. So there's about four different types of zakat. So he says وجوبها في النقدين. That's the first one. So it's obligatory في النقدين. Obviously, these are texts that are written in pre-modern times. And النقدين, and نقد means that which is used as currency. In pre-modern times, people used to make exchanges and trade, not just using currency, not just gold and silver, but there was a bartering system in place. So you could like buy 3 camels with 10 sheep or whatever and make that exchange. So there was times when many of the farmers and many of the people who worked in animal husbandry and livestock didn't necessarily have cash or what's called a naqdain or gold and silver. So they consider that a separate category. وَجُوبُهَا فِي النَّقْدَيْنِ. So gold and silver traditionally are considered to be the naqdain, to be that which is used to exchange goods. Most of the ulama after that said anything, أَيِّشِئْ يَقُوم مَقَامَهُمَا, anything that takes their place also would be considered zakatable, if we're going to use that word. So modern day world currency, so whether that's US dollars, whether that's euros, whether that's British sterling pounds, whether that's Japanese yen, all of those things are representative of ways of exchanging goods and services. And so zakat would be payable if you have an account in dollars, or if you have an account in gold, or if you have an account in euros, or if you have an account in pounds. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make a difference. So for all intents and purposes, we'll consider any currency as also in the same category as in naqdain, gold and silver. However, when we get to the nisab, which is the requisite amount, it will be measured in terms of gold and silver. Then we'll look to the equivalent depending upon the current, you know, market price of gold or silver. So gold and silver are still kind of stable as the world currencies, and one of the reasons for that is because they're finite resources. So there's only so much gold in the world, and there's only so much silver in the world. So in the pre-modern system, that was a way of kind of regulating prices. So unlike today, where people, government treasuries can just print money, and then we have the issues of credit and inflation and all the other things, which I don't get much into, but for our purposes, gold and silver, dollars, euros, all the same. فالنقدين وجوبة في النقدين, so it's obligatory in currency. One نعم, نعم is a word that just means animals, farm animals that are zakatable, and there are three categories, which we'll get into more later. But generally speaking, we're talking about cows, and we're talking about camels, and we're talking about sheep and goats. So included with cows would be anything that's like a cow, like a water buffalo or jemus, like in India or in Egypt, where they have also the water buffalo is domesticated, and that is considered to be same category as cow, whether it's male or female. And camels is a category by itself. Again, that's kind of specific to the Arabian Peninsula. And then sheep and goats are considered also to be that category. Those are an'am. وَعَشْرِينَ نَوَعًا مِنَ الْحُبُوبِ, and 20 types of grains and peas and seeds. This is for people who farm these things. So it's considered not just that when they sell them, but the actual amounts that they have will have a certain amount of it, as we'll see, either either 10% or 5%, depending on if it's irrigated by rainwater, then it would be 10%. If it needs a artificial irrigation system, it would be by 5%. So we'll get to that. But what they have in common is that these things can be stored and are staple commodities. In other words, communities can store them and then they use them all year. And so they're considered to be a zakatable thing because they have that type of value in society. So 20 types of the hubub, or of, you know, seeds and grains and peas and so forth. So he says, at-tamr, which are dates, was zabib, raisins, wal-bur, which is wheat, sha'ir is barley, wal-dhura, corn, wal-dukh, which is millet, wal-uruz, rice, wal-sult, which is a type of barley that's unique to the Mediterranean, wal-alas, also a type of wheat unique to the Mediterranean. And so those are kind of the grains. Wal-qattani sab'a, which are seven types of peas, which includes hummus, chickpeas, ful, which is fava beans, lubia, which is cow pea, adis, which is lentil, at-turmus, which is a lupin bean, al-jilban, which is also a type of pea, or sometimes called Indian pea, wal-bisilla, which is just green pea. And then also they said anything that is like those that can be stored and are a staple part of the diet can also be considered zakatable. Wallahu a'lam. Wal qattani as-sab'a, and those are the I mentioned those, the peas, and then wadawat az-ziyut al-arba'a, the four types of oil, which include sesame oil and olive oil and oil that's made from a radish, red radish. And then another type of vegetable that is like that. Some of them said also sunflower oil would be considered part of that because it's similar to the zayt zaytun, to olive oil. So it's not actually on the zayt, it's not actually on the oils themselves, but the product where the oils come from, which is the actual vegetable. So those are in terms of crops. وَمَا كَانَ لِلْتِجَارِ مِمَّا سِوَى ذَلِكَ وَمَا كَانَ لِلْتِجَارَةِ مِمَّا سِوَى ذَلِكَ, and that which is part of commercial transaction or merchandise, which we'll get to, also zakatable as well, from not those things. So to repeat, zakat is going to be upon if one has excess, and we'll define the excess or the requisite amount of cash, whether it be gold and silver or any other type of currency, and also if one would pay on their farm animals, namely the three types, cows and camels and sheep and goats, and then all of the grains and peas that we mentioned, those crops, one would also pay zakat. So that means oranges and apples and mangoes, and if you have a grape vineyard, all of those things are not zakatable. You would pay zakat on them when you sell them, right? When you make money for them, and then you would be of the first category, the one who has cash. Or it would be considered as a tijara if you're buying and selling on a consistent basis, and we'll get to that at the, in its proper appropriate section, then you still pay zakat. So technically, if you have an orange grove or orange groves, you are going to pay zakat, but you're not going to pay in oranges. That's the thing. You're going to pay in whatever you make from the orange grove. Versus if you have an olive grove, or many of them, then you would actually pay in olives and not in cash. That's the difference. And then the amounts would be different. So you'd actually pay more if you have the actual grove. You'd pay either 5 or 10% of the volume of the particular grove, depending upon whether it's irrigated naturally or artificially. And then if it's something that you're going to pay in excess when you reach the nisab, then it'll be 2.5%. So that's where the difference comes in. Fasl. So section, fi zakat al-naqdain. So looking at gold and silver. And wama yulhaq bihima, in terms of cash and currencies. يجب على مالك النصاب وهو من الذهب 20 دينارا وهي تبلغ من الليرة المجيدية 13.5 ومن الفضة 100 درهم ومبلغها من الروبية الإنجليزية 56. So this was written in the time of the author, which is like early 19th century, I think, or early 20th century. So he says, يجب على مالك النصاب. So whoever has the requisite amount, يعني you have this minimum, this nisab. وَهُوَ مِنَ الذَّهَبِ 20 دِنَارًا. So it's 20 dinars of gold. And then he says, وَهِيَ تَبْلُغُ مِنَ اللَّيْرَةِ الْمَجِيدِيَةِ 13.5. So before, in the Arabian Peninsula, before the Saudi kingdom came to power, this was the currency that they had, this lira al-majidiyya, and it says it's X amount. Don't be too concerned about that. وَمِنَ الْفِضَّةِ 100 dirham. And from fidda, from silver, it's 200 dirhams. So why 20 gold and 200 silver coins? Usually, not now, but in pre-modern times, there was usually like a 1-to-10 ratio between gold and silver. So usually one gold dinar was something like 10 silver dirhams. Now the rate is much wider. Now gold is much more precious and valuable than the silver. So we estimated, based upon gram weight and so forth, that the nisab today is anywhere between 2,500 to about 3,000 US dollars. That would be the nisab if we measured it in gold. If we measured it in silver, it would be much less. It would be a few hundred dollars. So, but I think going by the gold standard, we stick with the $3,000 US or so, around that much would be the nisab. So what is this nisab? It means if you have this amount, right? So let's say you're working a job and you're living paycheck to paycheck and you never have $3,000 in your account, then you wouldn't have to pay zakah. So if you never at any point held on to 3,000 US dollars or more for a whole year, right, and it didn't go below this nisab, then you would be you would never have to pay zakah on that. In fact, you may be a recipient of zakah. We'll get to that later. But you wouldn't have to pay. So he says, إِذَا تَمَّ النِّصَابُ مِنْ أَحَدِهِمَا أَوْ مَجْمُوعَ مِهِمَا كَأَنَّ يَكُونَ عِنْدَهُ 7 liras إِلَّا ثُلُثٌ و28 رُوبِيَّةٌ rupees, يعني وَكَانَ مُلْكُهُ تَامًا بِخِلَافِ الْعَبْدِ وَالْغَاصِبِ وَجَبَتْ فِيهِ الزَّكَاةُ بَعْدَ الْحَوْلِ وَالْمُخْرَجُ مِنْهُ رُبْعُ الْعُشْرِ. So if you have the nisab from either one category or more, so in our particular case, if you have multiple currencies. You have an account in US dollars, you have another account in euros, you have another account in some other currency. Look at the sum, not just one. So if they all add up to 3,000 US plus, then at that point you would have to pay zakat on it, assuming the other conditions are fulfilled, which we'll see in a second. So what are the other conditions? Your mulk is tam. And mulk tam means you fully and wholly own it and can have it. So in pre-modern days when the people were in bondage and the slave actually owned things, but their milk of it is not tam. They don't fully own it because their master owns some of it because they own them. Obviously, we don't have that situation anymore. Or al-ghasib, the usurper. Not that he'd be thinking about paying you zakat if someone embezzled money, but their milk is not tam either, right? They don't actually own that. So if they have full ownership over it, sovereignty over it, and وَجَبَتْ فِيهِ الزَّكَاةُ بَعْدَ الْحَوْلِ, after a year has passed, an Islamic year, so that's the lunar year. So the way to do it is to choose a month. If you're a salaried person, let's say if you're receiving a regular salary, to choose a month where you're going to start counting. Say it's Ramadan. So if in Ramadan you have $3,500 in your account, and then throughout the year it goes up and it goes down, it goes to 10,000, then 7, then 8, then whatever, but it never went below 3,500. So if the 3,500 stays with you until the next Ramadan, then you're going to pay zakat on that 3,500. How much you're going to pay? Ruba al-ushr, which is 2.5% of the 3,500. Then that would be zakatable. And then you look at it from that Ramadan and see how much you have. So let's say at the end of that Ramadan you had 5,000. Well, you're only responsible to pay on 3,500 because you didn't have the 5,000 throughout the year. You only accumulated that in the last few months. Then the new amount you're looking at is 5. If the 5 stays with you throughout the year, then you pay on the 5. If it drops to 3, then you pay on the 3. If it drops below 3, such as by the next Ramadan you have less than 3, then you don't pay zakat. This is for a salaried person. However, for other types of people, it's going to be different. Like if you're a tradesperson and you're buying and selling, and or if you acquired wealth, then there are different rules, which we'll get to in a second. وَحَوْلَ الرِّبْحِ حَوْلُ أَصْلِهِ وَيَكْمُلُ بِهِ النِّصَابُ فَمَنْ مَلَكَ عَشْرَةَ دَنِيرَ وَاتَّجَرَ فِيهَا فربها عشرة أو أكثر قبل الحول أو عنده زكاه لحولها ولا صبر لكمال النصاب. So let's say you are a trader, and here a trader in the sense that you are buying and buying something and then selling it for more than what you paid for it. That's what he means by trade. Not that you buy something and then you are renting it out and you still own it. That's a different category. So this category. للربح. So حول الربح حول أصله. So the حول, or the year that we count for the profit, is we look at the capital. When did you acquire the capital? Not when did you acquire the profit. So let's say I had $10,000 that I have in January, or let's say Ramadan, make it simpler. And I traded with it some things. I bought some merchandise and I sold, whatever, and then at the next Ramadan, from that 10,000, I now have 20,000, but that I acquired during the year. So how much do I pay? Do I pay on the 10,000 that was the original, and when do I pay? No, you pay on the 20,000, the whole thing, and it's from the Ramadan when you acquired the 10,000. Because the year that you're going to start counting is from the year of al-asl, of when you had the original capital. And then you do it from. So let's say I inherited an amount of money. This is called fa'idah. When I inherit something, I don't pay zakat on it until a year passes. But let's say I took that inherited money and I bought, you know, some bananas. I bought a banana, you know, and then I trading in bananas, and I made 50,000 from the bananas. When do I start counting? When I inherited the original 10. How much am I going to pay? On the 60,000. If a year passes and I still have it in cash. So this is called the حول الربح, so the profit itself, go back to the original date. So the example he gives, فمن ملك عشرة دنانير, whoever has 10 dirhams, 10 dinars, واتجر فيها, and traded in these 10 dinars, فربح عشرة أو أكثر قبل الحول, أو عنده زكاه لحولها. So let's say you had less than the nisab, that's his example. So 10 dinars is less than 20. So let's say I started trading and I had $1,000. And I started trading and then I made 2,000 on it during the year. The 2,000 came like around June though. But I made it from the original 1,000. When do I start counting for the 3,000 that I maintain in my possession? From when I got the original 1,000. Not in June when I made the 2,000, but I go back to the month where I made it first. So that's what he's saying here. فَرَبَحَ عَشْرَةً أَوْ أَكْثَرْ قَبْلَ الْحَوْلِ أَوْ عِنْدَهُ. So if you make that money before the حَوْلِ or عِنْدَهُ زَكَّاهُ لِحَوْلِهَا وَإِلَّا صَبْرَ لِكَمَالِ النِّصَابِ. If you don't make the nisab, so I had 1,000 and I made another 1,000, that's 2,000. Do I have to pay zakat on that? No, because I don't have the nisab. Three. When I complete it, right, whatever that time is, then I pay. If I make it to three, then I pay the zakat on it. That's called al-ribah, profit on something that I had, capital I acquired. أما الفائدة, right, فائدة means وهي ما تجدد تجدد من كهبة أو إرث أو ثمن مقتنن فيستقبل بها. فائدة means not something that I traded, but something that was given to me, that I acquired. So it could be a gift, it could be inheritance, or I could have sold something that I possessed that was for my personal use, like a car or a house or whatever. So that was for my personal use. I wasn't using it to trade, but I sold it. Then once I sold the car for 20,000. That was my personal car, not a car that I was using to I'm not a car dealer. Then I count for the 20,000 a year from when the time I sold it. This is called الفائدة. كغلة مشترية للتجارة. So this غلة, which means that which I get from a yield of something I bought to get its yield, like rent for a house or rent for a car. Then in this case, I am going to pay the same as the فائدة. The moment I get the rent money and it makes the nisab, then I'm going to pay the zakat on the rent money. Not when I acquired the thing that I was going to make the money on. So let's say I bought an apartment complex. When do I pay the money? When do I pay the zakat? Well, the apartment complex, I didn't buy it to resell it. That's a different category. As we said, that's making a profit. But I bought it to rent out the apartments. Then in this case, it's like the fa'ida. It's like the thing that I just got. So I have to wait a year after I make the nisab from the rent money. Then I'll pay whatever zakat is due, 2.5% on the rent money. Huh? When I get the rent money, yeah. When I get enough rent money, then I count from there, from that point. ومن ملك نصابا أو استفاد دونه زكى المستفاد بحوله وإن قل. أو should be ومن ملك نصابا واستفاد دونه زكى المستفاد بحوله وإن قل. So someone gets the nisab, wastafada dunahu. In other words, you have the nisab, and then from that, something else you bought and you rented from it. Yani istafad, yani another fa'ida came, something came to you. Zakka al-mustafad bihawlihi winqal. Because it came from the original amount that had nisab. So I didn't use all of the money, I used some of the money. But I look at the whole thing from when did I originally acquire the capital, Ramadan, and it was 3,000, whether I bought an apartment or I didn't. Some of it I left and some of it I did not. And then I got money from, you know, renting out that thing. Then I look, because I didn't use all of the money, then I look from the original time of the of when I acquired it, and then I pay zakat from that date. In other words, I look at that date, not the later date of when I got the other money from it. So that's in terms of fa'ida ughalla, fa'ida or yield, and something that I acquire via gift or inheritance, or I sold a personal item. This is all called fa'ida. And to reiterate, that I'm only going to pay the zakah upon it once the year passes from the time of sale, not from the time I acquired that thing. So if I inherit a house or I inherit a car and I'm using it for my personal use, I don't pay any zakat on that until I sell it. And the same thing, similarly for the ghalla, for the yield, or a rent from a house or an apartment or a car, when I collect enough of the rent, if they pay me one shot for the year, then at that point, I count from that point in time until count a year. If it remains with me, then I pay the zakah. So the only thing that I'm looking at where I don't count the year and I look before the year is if I sell something for a profit. Not that I rent out its use, but I actually sell the item, then we say is zakah ala min tarikh aslihi. We look to the date when I originally acquired that item, not the date of sale. And that's where I count from the year to year. Allahu a'lam. Then he moves into al-tijara. And he said, tijara al-qismain, ihtikar wa idara. So in terms of commercial merchandise, there's two types of traders. One is called al-muhtakir. Muhtakir means I'm waiting for the highest price. In other words, I'm holding on to it until I feel the market conditions are right, then I'll sell it. That's like someone who owns maybe a stock portfolio, if they're not a day trader. Day trader is different. We'll get into that in a second. Or someone who owns a rare item like a, you know, some sort of antique, and they only have like one of them, and they're waiting to sell it to see when the right price is. So this is called al-muhtakir. Amma al-idara, al-mudir, is someone who owns a store and is buying and selling merchandise, and you know, maybe their inventory at any one point is a day or two or three, and then they sell. So this is called al-mudir, not al-muhtakir. So they're buying and selling all the time. So they're having a constant tajaddud, they're having a constant renewal of their inventory. That's a different category than al-muhtakir, the one who's waiting for market conditions are right and to make that one sale. So the فالمحتكر هو الذي يرصد بسلعه غلاء الأسواق لا يقومها, as we described. المحتكر is the one who's waiting for the right time, market conditions, to sell. لا يقومها, he doesn't count his inventory, right? Because the other guy is going to pay on his inventory. This person is going to pay when he receives or gets the sale. إنما يزكي المقبودة من أثمانها إذا بلغ نصابا ولو في مرات الحول من يوم ملك أصله أو زكاه ثم بعد ذلك يزكي ما قبضه وإن قل لحول فقط إنما يزكي المقبوض من أثمانها إذا بلغ نصابا. So إنما يزكي المقبوض, so that which he has acquired from its sale, if it makes the nisab, like 3,000 or plus dollars in our case, وَلَوْ فِي مَرَّاتِ الْحَوْلِ مِنْ يَوْمِ مِلْكَ أَصْلِهِ, even if he sells it and gets another one, sells it, doesn't matter, the intention is ihtikar, waiting for the right market conditions, then you're going to measure from the day يَوْمَ مِلْكَ أَصْلِهِ, from the day that he acquired the original thing, that's when you measure the year. Oh, the last time he pays zakat on what he acquired. ثم بعد ذلك يزكي ما قبضه وإن قل. Then after that, he will pay zakat on that which he has acquired, even if it's less, because you're looking to the original item, not the money that you made after it, and only for 1 year. In other words, I can hold on to the thing for 5 years, so I have to pay zakat on it for 5 years in a row? No, just as soon as I sell it, then I wait the year and then I pay the zakat. أما المدير, the mudir is different. وهو الذي لا يرصد الأسواق. This is the one who has a constant inventory, change of inventory. هو الذي لا يرصد الأسواق. He is not waiting for the right market condition. He's selling at market price, whatever it is that day. I sell fish. So fish has a market daily rate. So whatever that rate is, I'm going to sell it that day. وَالَّذِي لَا يَسْرُ الْأَسْوَاقِ فَيُزَقِّ النَّاضَ. And nad means that which you sold. What did you get back? وَيُقَوُّمُ السِّلَعَ إِذَا بَعَ مِنْهَا بِدِرْهَمٍ فَأَكْثَرَ. ويقوم المؤجل من العروض بالنقد والنقد بالعروض ثم بالنقد فمن كان له ألف مؤجل إلى شهر شوال وحوله رجب يقال لو أردنا أن نشتري حديدا مثلا بألف مؤجل إلى شوال كم يحصل لنا فإذا قيل 80 قنطارا قيل لو أردنا أن نبيع ذلك القدر نقدا فبكم يشترى فقيل يشترى ب800 زك 800 على هذا فقس. So it's a little complicated, but not really. Basically, I have an inventory, and I have cash, some things I sold. And this person will look, you know, at the specific time in the year, whether it's here, he mentioned Shawwal, and then, or it's Hawluhu Rajab. And then he looks at that time. He said, if we were, because he's buying and selling, every 3 days he's getting rid of his inventory, or maybe every day and he's getting new inventory. So how does he figure out? He said, let's look what we have right now in terms of cash and inventory. If I were going to sell this inventory today, when I'm going to pay the zakah, how much would I sell it for? He said, well, if you have steel and you have, I would sell it for 800 whatever, then I pay on the 800 plus whatever cash I have from the other sales. And that I would do on a yearly basis. So he doesn't actually, he hasn't sold the 800 yet. But he said, if I were to sell it today, how much would I get for it? So this is someone who's fairly confident that, you know, they change their bid'ah, you know, their merchandise is in and out all the time. So like Jeff Bezos of Amazon, he's fairly confident he's going to make, I don't know, $50 million of sales or $100 million in the day. And how long does the inventory stay in stock? Maybe a week or something, whatever it is. Certain inventory is constant change. So he's going to look at all his inventory and say, how much is all this worth? Were to sell it today, right? Because that's what he's been selling all year. And then he would pay the zakat on that amount. وَلَا زَكَى فِي قَرْضْ وَلَا ضَائِعَ وَلَا مَغْصُوبَ إِلَّا بَعْدِ الْقَبْدِ فَالْحَوْلِ فَقَطْ. There is no zakat in a loan. So I loan somebody some money. I don't have it with me. I gave them $3,000, which is the nisab. Do I have to pay zakat on it while the other person is using it as a loan or using it in that sense? No. Until what? Till he pays me back. Once he pays me back, then I look for the year after that. If he stays with me, then I pay the zakat. وَلَا ضَائِعَ. Or if I had money and it got lost. And, you know, the Secret Service is looking for it and they can't find it. But do I pay on it? No, because I may not get it back. وَلَا مَخْصُوبَ. Or stolen money. In other words, someone stole money from me. Do I have to pay on the zakat on the stolen money? No, I don't, because it's not in my possession anymore. إِلَّا بَعْدِ الْقَبْدِ فَلِحَوْلٍ فَقَطْ. And then only after I acquire it. And then even if it was gone 10 years, then it came back to me, I only have to pay zakat on how many years? Just one. Because it wasn't in my possession those 10 years. Wallahu ta'ala a'la wa a'lam. So I'm going to stop here, and then next time we'll begin with zakat and na'am. But a couple of closing things. I know many people are going to have questions about like modern transactions and stock portfolios and things like this, which is quite complicated. And he doesn't go into that. But there are different ways of looking at those things. Generally speaking, we look at the same principles, especially when we're talking about things that are commercial and people use for savings, but they actually are what we consider to be a type of tijara, a type of commercial base, as he says. So it depends on which category we'll put them in. If I have something that is easily convertible to liquid cash, so I have an asset that's convertible to cash very easily, like equity, like stocks in a publicly traded stock market. Basically, it's an order, and then you get the cash maybe 2 or 3 days after it. So we consider that something very easily convertible. So some of the ulama have said this is in the same category as cash. So if you own, you know, X number of shares of Apple, and you have enough that's the nisab, which at this rate is only 10 shares, because Apple's selling for like 300 now, so that's 3,000, then if I have 10 shares of Apple and I have kept that with me, do I consider that to be like cash and I have to pay on it, or do I consider it something else? It depends. If I say I am muhtakir, right, if I say that I'm actually not keeping it as cash, I'm keeping it to make an investment, right? And that's what a muhtakir is an investor. So if I have something I'm keeping on, I'm waiting for the right market conditions to sell it. So I'm waiting for Apple to get to 400 before I sell. So that means I'm not going to sell at any price. That means I can consider myself to be the muhtakir. That means I don't pay zakat on it until I sell it. Because if I were to sell it now and I have no other, I don't have any other cash to pay for, I'd have to sell some of the stock in order to pay the zakat. So the Sharia doesn't require me to do that. Of course, the ma huwa anfa' lil faqir, what is better for the person who's the recipient of zakat, and societally speaking, is to pay the zakat on it to be on the safe side, assuming you have other cash that you can draw from, right? From the 3,000 you have, you know, 10% is 300. So we're only talking about like, you know, $75. So if you have that somewhere else, it's safer to, I would say, and better for on a societal basis to pay that. You don't lose anything if you intend that for the zakat. But also the Sharia is there to say if you are muhtakir and you're holding on to it until you sell, then you would not pay zakat on that. Same thing if you're holding on to real estate. You're not renting it like it's a piece of land. And you know that they're going to build a highway and there's going to be a commercial center, a mall across the street. And then once that happens, you know it's going to double and triple in price. So you're not selling now and you're waiting for this course of events to happen. And a piece of land is not easily converted into cash. It takes time to do that. So this would be like a muhtakir also. You would be waiting until you sell, until the sale comes. Once you sell it and you have the cash, then you wait a year on that and you pay zakat on that. That would be another scenario. However, anything that's like very close to cash, obviously money in your checking account, and I would say even in your savings account, would be considered cash. And naqdain, and you would pay the zakat on it, you know, if it stays in your account over the year, and you'd pay that amount. I guess that's kind of basically most of the things that I can think about right now. And if there are questions, we can answer them. And we have a week people could think about specific things, and then we can try to think about that too. Allahu ta'ala a'la wa a'lam, alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.